Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Veterans Day, 11/11/2017. Thanks for your service, veterans. This is episode 1438. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero, EEERO.com. Select overnight shipping at checkout and enter the code TECHGUY. And by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 400 categories of business software and thousands of ratings and reviews from software users just like you. Visit Capterra.com/TechGuy today. And by LegalZoom. Keep your business moving forward and let LegalZoom help out with all the legal stuff. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter TechGuy in the referral box at checkout. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches, you know, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you want to talk about technology, anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. It's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach us if you just use Skype out. We also have a great website with that information, a link to our chat room, and, of course, the show notes. Every link I mention, every topic, every call, every answer, it's all at techguylabs.com. Before we say anything else, of course, it's Veterans Day, the anniversary of the armistice, 11/11/1918 at 11:11 a.m., signing of the peace treaty. Ending the Great War. They didn't call it World War I because, well, they didn't know there'd be another one. But it's a good occasion to salute our vets and all those who've served our country. And we thank you for your service. 11/11 is also, it's just a coincidence, I think, Singles Day in China. I'm going to have to do some research on what Singles Day is. I think it's for single people. But I also know it's their Black Friday, basically. It's their biggest shopping day of the year. Guangguangjie. It's an entertaining festival widespread among mainland Chinese people, according to Wikipedia, to celebrate the fact they're proud of being single. And, of course, it makes sense. It'd be 11/11 because it's all single. You know, in fact, that's what Guangduojie means, is single sticks. Four single sticks. An individual that is alone. It has become the single largest shopping day in the world, both online and offline. And this year, because, of course, they've completed 11/11, or mostly completed 11/11 in China, the biggest ever, and it's kind of mind-boggling to hear these numbers. Remember, there are a billion Chinese people, and I guess a lot of them shop on 11/11 because the total sales for one company, Alibaba, which is kind of the Amazon of China, the Amazon, the eBay, all wrapped into one, single-day sales, more than $25 billion in one day. More than $1 billion an hour in sales. The gross merchandise volume. No wonder all these American companies like Google and China want to sell phones in China. Google and Apple, I should say, want to sell phones in China. Wow. That's mind-boggling. And it is a huge increase. Now, this is all online sales, remember. So there's room to grow there because there's a lot of in-person sales as well. It's a big shopping day overall. But it's a growth of 39% over last year. Holy cow. So just to put that in perspective, Black Friday last year was $3 billion in the U.S., $3 billion. Cyber Monday, $3.45 billion. And both of those were records last year. $3 billion. $25 billion today in China. Wow. It's just mind-boggling. Partly that's the size of China, but also it's a testament to how much online shopping goes on. And, of course, that's a kind of bellwether what's happening in the U.S. as well. Read an article in Bloomberg today, actually a few days ago. America's retail apocalypse is really just beginning. And it's not just Amazon that's putting brick-and-mortar stores out of business. Cumulative closings, excluding restaurants and grocery stores, more than 20,000 in 2017. Whoa. Chains are closing at a huge pace. 6,800 stores closing. It's not that the economy's not growing, is it? No. Consumer confidence is record high, unemployment historically low, and yet retailers are closing by the droves. Malls are turning into ghost towns. And according to Bloomberg, it's not merely online shopping that's hurting this, Amazon and so forth, or young people spending more money on experiences than things. Both of those are trends. But really, it was that these longstanding chains borrowed heavily, often from leveraged buyouts by private equity firms. Remember that acquisition, that crazy acquisition phase? Billions in outstanding loans. The debt is coming due. There are too many stores, too many malls. And Bloomberg says, get ready for the retail apocalypse. Retail bankruptcies in the last 10 years include Sharper Image, Borders, Circuit City, the Sports Authority, Radio Shack, Payless Shoe Source, Toys R Us, most recently, a $6.6 billion bankruptcy. Wow. What will the world look like if you can't? You know, many towns don't even have bookstores anymore. And I guess I'm part of the problem because while we have an excellent bookstore in town, our little Copperfields, which is a fabulous kind of independent bookseller. There are many good bookstores in the area. I almost always buy the books on Amazon. Isn't it easier? You just press a button, it comes in 2 days, and boom, you got it. And they're never, you know, out of stock. I think the last time I bought a book in the bookstore, the last time I tried, I went, and they said, yeah, we don't have it. We can order it for you. It'll be 2 weeks. I feel terrible, but I went home and I ordered it on Amazon. Malls are closing, stores are closing. And, of course, the scary thing is at some point you won't have much choice. You'll have to buy on Amazon. You won't have that choice. And many times they don't, of going to the local bookstore. This would be a good day perhaps to support your local retailer this weekend. Maybe go buy something from them. While you're there, have a dinner out if you can afford it. We don't even include grocery stores and restaurants in these numbers because they go out of business so fast. Nobody's trying to count that. That's a tough business, especially the restaurant business. Of course, Amazon bought Whole Foods, right? Indicating that they're very interested in taking over groceries as well. You can you've always been able to in many cities order groceries. Well, it's funny because it was a big thing in the early 2000s before the dot-com bust. Remember Peapod? Everybody thought, everybody would be shopping online. There was delivery services like Cosmo. A guy with a bicycle would come and give you a cart, bring you a carton of cigarettes and a pint of ice cream. Those went out of business, famous bankruptcies in the dot-com bust. But it's back now, and Amazon Fresh does grocery delivery. Instacart delivers. But there's more and more places. And there's more and more places that bring you food from restaurants, so much so that restaurants even, in many cases, no longer open to the public. They merely make food for food delivery services. One of the things we always talk about on this show is how our world is being changed by technology. Sometimes good, sometimes mostly good, by the way. It's easy to focus on the negatives. Mostly good. It's not all killer robots and store closings. But every once in a while, you see these giant changes in life. And sometimes they happen so gradually. The smartphone happened gradually enough that you forgot that, you know, you didn't always have a computer in your pocket. Well, get ready. It won't be long before we don't have a grocery store to go to or a bookstore to shop at. I think that might be a sad day. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to take your calls. Let's talk tech right after this. If you're listening to the podcast, the holidays are coming upon us, and that means it's time to get our best ofs together. We'd like to ask everybody who listens, if you've got a moment on the Tech Guy podcast or any of our other podcasts that you particularly remember with fondness, let's hope, it would be great for our best of. We have a web page that you can go to and kind of help us put those together, because it's a lot of work for our editors. They comb through all 52 episodes of each show, in this case 104 episodes of each show, looking for highlights, ideally short highlights. twit.tv/bestof is a little form. You don't have to fill every field. Don't be daunted because you don't know what minute and second that event happened. But even if you just say, hey, that time when this thing happened on that show, even that would be of help. twit.tv/bestof. And we'll, let me look at the calendar, because I think, yeah, the Christmas is a Monday and New Year's Day is a Monday. So the weekends before, there'll be reruns of the Tech Guy on the 23rd and the 24th and the 30th and the 31st. And I think we'll do the Best Of podcast the week between, you know, the week of December 24th is when we'll do the Best Ofs. So you got a little time to think about it. twit.tv/bestof. Thank you. Thank you for your help in putting that all together. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. And you know who's there answering those phones, working hard, slaving? Oh, what a pretty top. That is nice.
Thank you.
Is that batik? I don't know.
It might be.
It looks like African batik. It's very pretty.
The people on the radio have no idea what you're talking
about. I know.
About.
And so I'm letting. But see, that's the beauty of radio. You can say that, and then they imagine in their mind a pretty top.
But the funny thing is, this job costs me money because I feel like I have to wear something different
every time.
Like no. People on TV.
Do I? I wear the same thing every time.
But you're a boy.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of unfair, isn't it?
It's a double standard.
Like, it is a terrible double standard. I've worked in TV, did it for years, and yeah, if you're a woman in TV, you can't be caught dead wearing this. So much so that there is a service. My friend Becky Worley, who works for Good Morning America, There's a service for television anchors where they send you clothes suitable for anchoring, and you wear them once and you send them back. It's renting. Yeah, well, it's not. Yeah, you pay a monthly fee.
Yeah,
and you get outfits because it's crazy.
Yeah, why
and,
buy?
And you know, sometimes you'll be, if you're lucky, you work for somewhere where they have a wardrobe allowance, but most places, Believe it or not, do not.
And especially not anymore.
No, yes.
I think that's a thing of the past.
Yes. Yes. I never had a wardrobe allowance, but I did when I first worked on Tech TV. They had a wardrobe mistress who bought clothes for us and would keep them ironed and sewn, and then that didn't last very long.
I'm sure Kelly Ripa has her wardrobe.
Oh, but. You know, I used to for 12 years I did that
Regis
show.
And Kelly,
I retired when Regis did, and they have a lot of help.
Yeah, they have makeup, they have hair.
You know what's amazing about Kelly? She is so down to earth.
I love her.
She is what you see is what you get with her.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's an act or not. And I've always really liked her. So
she was always, you know, I'd do the show because I would go on and do gadgets. And she was always very kind. She would come to the makeup room and say hello before the show. And she was always like pretended she knew who I was and was really thrilled to see me. But I feel like it was genuine. And she was one of those people who, you know, a lot of stars like that, they don't want to be seen without makeup and wardrobe and hair, right? She didn't care. Mm-mm. She'd walk in curlers, no makeup, bathrobe. She'd say, hey.
I've seen her do some Instagram lives lately where she's getting her hair dyed.
Yeah, so. She does. She's very, but I love that about her. And I think that's one of the reasons she's succeeded. So, you know, she took over for Kathy Lee and mm-hmm. was Regis and Kathy Lee. And she was she was a soap opera star, I think kind of unknown. And she owns that show now.
Yeah,
she really owns
totally.
It.
Totally. Yeah. She came up from nowhere.
Thank you for mentioning her because I miss her a little bit.
I
stopped doing that.
It's the first person who popped in my mind as to somebody who I'm sure she has nothing to do with her wardrobe. Somebody else brings it in and doesn't have to pay for it.
Yeah, I don't know if she has nothing to do with it. She probably, you know what? It's even better than that. They come in, they show her 15 dresses.
Right.
And she goes, I'll wear that tomorrow.
But she doesn't have to go to the store, is what I meant.
Well, she couldn't go to the store, could she?
I think she leads a pretty normal life.
I think she lives a very glamorous life, but I don't know.
A glamorously normal life.
I don't know. My favorite memory of doing that show was teaching Regis Philbin how to tweet. How to use Twitter.
I remember
you. Remember that?
Yep.
Boy, was that
fun. About it.
Yeah, he did it, and then he was so excited about it, and then I remember him 2 weeks on the show, 2 weeks later saying, I quit Twitter.
Yeah.
He was a smart man.
He sent like one tweet.
He was a very smart man.
Well, you know, I still don't get Twitter. It's there for a reason, but I don't use it.
Twitter gets so much attention, especially now because the president uses it.
Yeah.
It gets so much more attention than I think it really
deserves.
Well, it deserves it, but it just, I think most people don't use it.
Yeah.
There's only, I think they claim 300 million active users, but half of them are bots. So I think it's really a small fraction of the normal public that they're aware of it, but they use Twitter. It's something us geeks, us tech.
Well, and we used
types.
It in the newsroom when I worked in news radio.
Oh, yeah.
We got stories from there all the time. I mean, that's where we would get our first leads.
Please.
I hate to admit it. But
you watch any news channel now, they're quoting Twitter constantly.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure you know, that gives Twitter an unearned, I think, weight that something's a story if it's big on Twitter. Well, everything. I mean, Twitter's the outrage engine of all outrage. I mean, it is just a machine for outrage and upset. And so what you get is the sense that the world is outraged and upset. No, it's just Twitter. Just people on Twitter are peeved. Did I say? I should say peeved.
I don't think you really said it. I think you started to, and
quick,
then it went.
Save me. Let's take a call.
I know. We've talked wardrobes
and
Twitter.
I know.
Let's see. Calls? Do we have those?
Oh, I think you've been busy. I'm looking at the board.
Alexandria in Fullerton is needing some help with sending out mass tweets. It's something she used to
Mass tweets.
Don't send
mass tweets, please.
Mass texts.
Oh, mass texts.
And for a good reason, but for some reason, her phone service is not allowing her to do that anymore.
Oh, what a surprise. Hi, Alexandra. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Alexandra.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I want to say this may end up saving marriages and relationships if we can work this out.
Oh, dear.
I work on behalf of a nonprofit, and we sponsor healthy marriage and healthy relationship programs.
Oh, that's neat.
Mostly in North Orange County. So what happens is these folks attend our classes, and then they sign up to get text messages throughout the week that remind them of the principles we're teaching them every Tuesday night. Well, I have over 350 people signed up, and for years I've been using a great iPhone app that let me send text messages to up to like about 65 people at a time.
Yes.
And now the app got updated, and my cell phone service provider's limits, I guess, have been imposed.
Right.
So I'm stuck with only a limit of up to like 10.
The same thing. Yeah, I can help you. The same thing happened with email. Remember, you used to be able to send out a lot of emails, but the same thing happened, which is spam. And so email companies and now mobile phone companies, they don't want to be party to sending out mass spam messages. So just as with email, you'll use a newsletter service like Constant Contact or MailChimp. There are services for mass texting that will let you text up to 100,000 people.
Well, actually, I do know about that because we actually use one for another program we sponsor, but that runs into a lot of money. We even get a nice discount, and I've used two of those web-based programs where you can opt in with a keyword, and then so I do I do use that. I schedule them. But to do this for 350 people three times a week would, the cheapest I've seen is it would cost me something like $80 a month.
Are you a nonprofit?
We are a nonprofit, but our little nonprofit.
So let me recommend easytexting.com. They have a paid service, but they also offer text messaging for nonprofits. And they'll give you, if not free, I don't know, but I think they'll give you a very good deal if not free. And so, yeah, it's such a small number. But you understand the reason your telco won't do it anymore is because they don't want you – they just don't want to assume the responsibility for protecting people from spam. So you're going to have to use a service that does it in separately from you, just as with mass emails. And there are a number of them. But if you search for nonprofit mass texting, you'll probably find a few. But Easy Texting does offer that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the Scott Wilkinson hour has begun, or is about to begin. We'll get Scott on the phone here. Update on the iPhone X, still love it. There's some new features now. The Clips app came out. Oh my gosh, is this cool. I could show you real quickly. So it uses the Face ID stuff. So selfies have never been better because you suddenly have this selfie camera that does all this cool stuff. But this uses basically augmented reality in the selfie and the speed of the CPU. So here I am in downtown Hong Kong somewhere. But notice that I'm also kind of painterly. This is one of the scenes. There are many scenes you can take yourself and put yourself into. This is down to the waterfront I think it's Brooklyn, because I think that's the Brooklyn Bridge. And there's the microphone. The microphone's with me. The microphone came with me, which is pretty funny. And, of course, there's a lot of attention paid to the Star Wars ones. I'm on the Millennium Falcon. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Or the Mega Destroyer. I really like this one. This is Paris. But see, what happens here, watch, I'll select it. And then film some stuff. Wait a minute, I selected it. Okay. And I'm going to film some stuff. So let's start. It's a beautiful night. It's a beautiful night. And they call it Bella Notte. Okay, I've recorded that. Now, if I come down here to the recording, I can change the effect, which is cool. Let me see. Where does that happen? So there's the recording. But I think that I figured this out before. Where do I do that? Save clip. Effects. Is it one of the effects? Stickers. I don't want a sticker. I have to figure this out again, because I was able to change the... here's an 8-bit one I really like. You're in a 8-bit world. But where was it that I changed the effect? Oh, here. Those are live titles. That's not what I want. Anyway, this is the new Clips app, and these features require the iPhone X because it's using the Face ID. But this is in real time. I mean, somebody pointed out that it took them, I think, 6 months to do the AHA video take on me. You could do the same thing in real time now, which is pretty impressive. Take on me, da 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 da. I should, I'll do a lip sync. But I was pretty sure.
You need to go into a freezer in a grocery store, right?
Is that where they did it? In a freezer in a grocery store?
No, that's we that's what happens in the video, right? He opens the
door. Oh, yeah, he goes in. Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I could do that. Somebody made a version of it. So that's pretty cool. Thank you, Cobra.
Where are you going to do that?
It's the new Clips app. So they updated the Clips app to work with the iPhone X's face recognition stuff.
Okay.
Pretty cool, huh? And that magic music means but one thing. It's time for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, editor-in-chief of the AVS. I've just made you editor-in-chief. He's merely an editor. At the AVSforum.com.
I'm the top dog.
Are you? Well, then you should say, I want to be the editor-in-chief. That's the title you want. EIC. That's all right. You're humble. You're a humble man. You've been talking, and it's, of course, the talk of the town these days. In the chat room, you've been talking about a burn-in on OLED screens. And the reason it's on everybody's top of mind is because of the Pixel 2 XL, the new Google Android phone that has had – it's an OLED screen made by LG. Apple hasn't had this problem, although they say all OLEDs are susceptible to burn-in. Apple hasn't had this problem. Samsung's been making OLED screens for years without a problem. But numbers of people are complaining about the screen on the Pixel 2 XL.
You know, I have heard that, and I'm not quite sure why, because LG makes the OLED screens for many different companies.
For my TV, I don't have any burn-in on it.
That's right. I think it's probably less of a problem with TV than it is with cell phones. The real problem comes when you have, you know, the same still image on the screen for many, many hours.
And of course you do with a cell phone, your dock particularly, and that's what's been showing up on the Google phones is those little buttons at the bottom.
Right.
And
they're always there every time the phone is on.
The story I heard, and not from Samsung but from others, is that Samsung jitters those positioning of those icons by one pixel back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a screensaver might do.
Yeah, exactly. It's called pixel shifting or pixel orbiting, and most OLED TVs have that as well. Plasmas used to have it for sure because they were more susceptible.
Right. They were terribly susceptible. Should I worry about my LG OLED TV? Is there anything I need to do?
Not unless you leave it on the same news channel or sports channel for days at a time.
Well, here's the big problem. And a lot of people use their big TV for gaming. I just got the new Xbox One X, Scorpio, which is beautiful. 4K, UHD. I'm playing games like Assassin's Creed Origins, and I feel like I'm in Egypt. It's just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Call of Duty World War II puts you on a – it's actually terrifying. Starts with D-Day. And if you – I mean, you know, it was bad enough watching the Tom Hanks movie Saving Private Ryan. That D-Day scene is very realistic. But now you're in it in a 4K UHD display. And it really gives – you know, on this Veterans Day, it really gives you a sense of how terrifying that battle was, the D-Day battle, you know, going on to Omaha Beach out of those landing craft. And so it's a very vivid experience. So, but often with gaming, you know, you pause it, go to dinner, and the screen, stays the same. I should worry about that, huh?
You know, if you're going to do that for hours at a time.
Well, of course I am. What do you think?
I mean, pause it for hours.
Okay.
I don't mean play for hours.
Does the TV have built in its own kind of preservation?
Well, it has. It probably. I don't remember yours in particular, but most OLEDs have this pixel shifting or pixel orbiting, which actually automatically shifts the image around by a pixel here and there.
And it's imperceptible, right?
Because it is. It is.
It's such a high resolution display.
Especially at a 4K display.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're never going to see that unless you put your nose up against the glass.
So another thing people are going to do, Punter Tab in our chat room mentions this, this holiday season put a Yule log on their TV. The fire moves, but the logs, you know, are pretty static.
Yeah. If you do that for days at a time, you might have a problem on an OLED. Now, in the chat room, we were also talking about whether or not this is a problem with LCD TVs or what are often called LED TVs, which are really LCD TVs with an LED backlight. And the answer is it's even less of a problem on LCD TVs. It's not zero. LCD TVs can get a little bit of image retention or image persistence. And I must point out the difference between image retention and burn-in. Image retention is temporary. Burn-in is permanent.
Hey.
And yeah, there's
Google has a term for it, which I think is a little disingenuous, a euphemism called differential aging. That was my reaction.
I hadn't heard that one. That's good.
But it's kind of accurate because what's happening, one of the problems I understand with OLED screens is that the pixels can age, particularly the blue or purple.
The blue ones do age quicker, but it's not a problem because LG OLED screens, which is what all the TVs have, use white OLED material and color filters. So there's no blue OLED material.
Oh, nice.
So it doesn't matter. It's not a problem.
Okay.
Now, we just put up a poll on AVS Forum. Does your OLED TV exhibit image persistence or burn-in? And if you go to the poll itself, which you click on the comments, the vast majority, the majority say I don't own an OLED, but right under that is...
Well, don't take the poll if you don't own an OLED.
Exactly. Well, you know. But the next most common answer by far is my OLED has never experienced either issue, image persistence or burn-in. 38% of respondents said that. And a few of them said, on rare occasions, I spot tiny temporary image persistence. And one person so far out of 205 has said my OLED has minor, barely noticeable permanent burn-in.
What would you do to detect it? I mean, if you don't see it in the normal viewing, well, that's not a problem. But
it's not a problem.
If you wanted to check to see if there is any, what would you put a gray screen up? What would you do?
You could put a white screen. I think a white screen, a full field white screen, would pretty easily reveal that. But that would be pretty obsessive if you didn't see it in regular content. And you said, I wonder if I have this, and put up a white screen and go, look, there's a tiny faint shadow. If you're not seeing it in real content, I don't worry about it.
I do see, though, that 11 people say they've suffered noticeable permanent burn-in with their OLED screen. And that's a pretty big number, especially there were only 206 respondents so far. We'll make that number go up if everybody goes.
It's 5%. It's 5% of the respondents. And I suppose that could be because they, kept it on a sports station or a news station with that ticker along the bottom.
Well, the bug is the problem because the ticker is moving. I guess the border of the ticker doesn't move.
The border of the ticker. And in video games, what you mentioned about video games earlier, they have some sort of scoreboard in a corner, right?
Often have fixed things.
Fixed elements in the image. That's the thing really to be – and I wouldn't be super concerned about, I can't play video games because there's this thing. If you played a video game for 5 days in a row
– Is there anything you can do about it if it happens?
If it's permanent, no.
So there are some that go away. They fade over time.
And again, just take that image off the screen, play full motion, full screen video all the time. It'll go away.
Okay. And then it is conceivable if it's been there long enough. Just I remember that with plasmas, man. The early plasmas. Boy, that was
early
terrible.
Plasmas. They made them a lot better by the end of the plasma.
And we should point out this was a problem with the old tube computer monitors. That's why you had a screensaver. That's what it did. We don't need
That's
them
what
anymore.
It was for.
But
it would
bounce things around.
Right.
All right. And QLED, the Samsung QLED, that's not OLED, that's LCD.
No,
so you
it's
don't
LCD.
You don't have to worry.
Not a problem.
Although, the way they print it, it looks a lot like OLED.
I know.
That's not nice, Samsung.
That was tricky, in my opinion.
Subject for another day. Thank you, Scott. Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com.
You know what we need?
What do we need there, Johnny?
A new screensaver.
He says we need the new screensavers.
Ah, thank you very much. Somebody here in the chat room is talking about degaussing. And I remember that from the old CRT days. And there was a lot of electromagnetic energy going around there. And you could degauss. I mean, you could degauss tape, recording tape. And you could also have a device that you'd put up against the screen and it would kind of even out all the... all the phosphor, I suppose, on the screen. But with digital, you know, there's no electron beam shooting at the phosphors in modern TVs. So, you know, LCD TVs, I think, have almost zero probability. Samsung, somebody in the chat room pointed out, and I think all the manufacturers do put in their manual, well, you know, you want to be careful because you might get image retention. But with LCD TVs, which include those that are called LED TVs, I think there's virtually zero chance. Maybe not 100% zero, but almost zero. OLED, probably a little more chance. I've been told, I'm not quite sure why that is, to tell you the truth. I've heard that it's because OLED is an organic compound, organic light-emitting diode. So it uses organic chemistry as opposed to inorganic chemistry. And for some reason that I don't understand, that might be a little more susceptible to image retention. But again, as I said, all you have to do is, you know, go back to full motion video without any static elements in the picture, and it should be fine. You should be fine as long as it's temporary image retention. You could also, in the old days, you can't really do this anymore, but you could tune between the channels and get snow. And if you had the snow on your screen, that could also help make the wear out, you know, wear the pixels more evenly, which is what they want to do. Plasmas used to have this. I have to admit, I haven't looked for it in OLEDs. They used to have a thing where they would put a white, you know, internally they had a white test screen and they'd put on the screen, and sometimes it had a black bar that wiped from the top to the bottom over and over and over. And again, this was to even out the wear of the plasma pixels. Now, I must admit I haven't looked for that in OLED TVs, but I'll have to. I have one here. I have the Sony OLED, so I'll go look in the menu and see if that's possible, if they have that. Let's see. Compter, did you see the leaked BF ads, Black Friday ads? I was going to talk about Black Friday next week, so stay tuned for that.
Can you stick around for the top?
Yeah, happy to.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. Dave's on the line from Wichita Falls, Texas. Hi, David.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm very well. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. I called last Saturday. My Windows 10 wouldn't update.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me what I needed to do. Well, I did something different, but it fixed it.
You didn't listen to me. You did something. What did you do different?
Well, turns out that Roxio that I'd put on that wasn't compatible.
Yes.
It put a thing called CinePlayer on my computer.
Yep.
And I didn't realize that was Roxio. So once I deleted that, it updated.
Perfect. Yeah, what I told you was a more extreme, which it really was only in the case where just deleting or uninstalling the programs didn't work. And that's because sometimes Roxio, in fact, most of the time Roxio installs drivers. But it's good. You could just uninstall that one Roxio app and everything went fine.
Yeah. But my question is, programs that worked on Windows 10 before I did that are not working now, especially Total Recorder, which I learned from the old screensavers. I think it was Kevin Rose that told me about that and DVD Shrink.
Yep.
And I still use them, but now.
But that's 20 years ago, my friend.
I know. They still work up until I did the upgrade to the Windows 10 upgrade to the newest version.
Yeah.
And now they don't.
Yeah. I think that's – I'm not sure. That may be – well, there's a variety of reasons why. It tends to be stuff that's pretty low level. Total Recorder, though, should. I don't know. Have you checked their website for an update?
Yeah.
And they don't have one.
Well, no, they do. I went to Total Recorder, and it had the screen. Then I went to retype Total Recorder from Windows 10, and the exact same screen came up.
Interesting. So they obviously didn't update it, but they said they did, or maybe.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
know.
Yeah. So this is the case with Windows 10. In fact, it's the case with every operating system update. Windows 10 still supports the 32-bit subsystem for Windows. I wish they would not, because that's a source of a lot of compatibility and security issues. It should be all 64-bit, but they do still have to support it, mostly because there's some Microsoft programs that require 32-bit. What they may have done, and I'm not sure, I'll have to ask my Windows experts, anybody listening who might know, what they may have done is said, well, we're not going to support other people's 32-bit programs, but we have to continue to support ours, obviously.
I was going to send you a $20 bill for Christmas, but...
No, please, don't send me any money. No, just your listenership is all I ask.
I didn't think you'd pay the $20 bill that I sent you.
Who's on the cover of the $20 bill?
And I'd like to recommend a book. You may already read it, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
An absolute classic by Robert Persig, who passed away fairly recently.
Yeah.
It is a must-read, I think, especially... I think people read it in their formative years, you know, their late teens, early 20s. And it's one of those books. It's about philosophy. It's about taking care and paying attention to what you're doing and doing what you're doing, not something else, right? And very powerful.
Also, I've already forgotten what you told me about my problem. Is there anything I can do?
No, you can't. If programs are not designed to work with Windows 10, there's nothing you can do. And this is just the way of the world. The same thing happened, by the way, to the people on the iPad who went to iOS 11. I think it was more of a shock for them. I think people who use Windows know that as you know, every time you do a big update like Windows 10, you're going to see some applications that are just incompatible. And Microsoft's pretty good about marking those and saying not run. I don't think there used to be. Remember with when XP first came out? Actually, no, it wasn't XP. I think it was when Windows 7 first came out, a number of programs were broken. So they created an XP compatibility mode that allowed you to run Windows XP programs in under Windows 7. Let me just see if there's a compatibility mode. Yeah, actually, there is. So one thing you might want to do, there's a program compatibility troubleshooter built into the control panel on Windows 10. You can find it very quickly. You don't have to dig through the control panel just by pressing the Windows key and typing program compatibility or even the word compatibility, and you'll find it. And that will walk you through it and may have some of the same features of the XP compatibility mode. It's funny. One of the reasons programs didn't work in Windows 7 is merely that they said, well, what version of Windows are you? And if it was a version they didn't know about, because it's a new version, they just wouldn't run. And so it was simple in those cases just to say, pretend. When queried, Windows 7 would say, Windows XP. And the program would say, okay, fine, and run. I don't think that's the problem in many of these cases. I think it has a lot more to do with driver compatibility, new driver models. And most importantly, I think the system's 32 subsystem. We want to get rid of that. That 32-bit version of Windows had all sorts of compatibility problems. Many of the security flaws we see come from 32-bit programs. And so I think Microsoft certainly is moving in the direction of making those not run. As I said, though, they have a few programs that still are Win32, so they can't do it 100%. Let's go to Paul in San Diego. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. A few weeks ago, I called about Lenovo not responding to an issue.
Yeah.
I had a laptop. And it turns out that it really was a driver problem. They kept on telling me that, and I kept on putting new drivers in. They're old drivers, I should say. And then for a while it would work, and then Microsoft would go in and say, hey, these are old drivers. Take these new ones without my knowledge.
So update was just... putting them in.
Just putting them in. And so I would, this happened to me already once after I did it. And I said, well, let me try it again. And sure enough, that was what fixed it. And then I found the patch in that you could set that Microsoft won't do that.
Oh, hallelujah.
So now it works just fine.
So in effect, the older drivers, the ones from Lenovo, were the proper drivers. And Microsoft kept
Correct.
Installing what they thought were better, newer drivers, and you didn't want them to do that.
Correct.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, but I did mention your name. I'm not sure if that helped or not. But the person on the other end, she talked with me, and we solved the issue.
Fantastic.
You also, if I could bring up another thing, we talked about a remote microphone, Movo.
Yeah.
You thought you might be buying one. I was curious. Did you
I haven't bought it yet. No, that's my son. I have to ask my son. He was the guy who wanted to get it. You were looking for a wireless microphone for your camcorder. And my son had found this Movo on Amazon. It's the cheapest one out there. But as I pointed out, inexpensive wireless can often mean interference issues. Let me ask Henry if he bought it, and I'll let you know later on the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
So, yeah, we've been talking about burn-in, and apparently this Pixel 2 phone has a pretty serious burn-in issue, and it must be something with that particular screen. I don't know what it is. Bassdrum said he saw some image retention early in his OLED's life, and now that he's got about 2,500 hours on it, he doesn't see it as much. Things like the logo would appear a little while afterwards and so on. And one situation that I didn't mention was letterbox movies. You know, because, of course, the TV is 16 by 9 or 1.78 to 1. And letterbox movies are 1.85 to 1 or 2.35 to 1. So they have to be displayed with black letterbox bars on the top and bottom of the image. And that can become a problem if that's all you watch for days and weeks and years. Then, yeah, those letterbox bars are going to probably end up being burned in there. But again, I say, sure, watch those movies. Don't worry about it. Then go back to HDTV or HDTV programming, Blu-rays or so on, that fill the entire screen with an image. A moving image, and you go back and forth between those things, you're not going to have a problem. Simply not going to have a problem. Bassdrum also says, never seen a screen wiping option on the LG OLED like the ones on Panasonic plasmas, virtually all plasmas. You know, like I said, I have to go back into my my Sony OLED menu system and see if it has one. I don't remember seeing one. So if they didn't put one in, they don't think it's a big deal or a big problem, the manufacturer. And I don't really either, unless, again, you've got it. You just hold a still image on there for days at a time. Then you might have a problem. But, just don't do that. Doctor, it hurts when I do this. Well, don't do it. Let's see, a couple user 7706 asked about a good low-priced AVR, and I recommended the Denon AVR S730W. Under $500, does Atmos, compatible with Dolby Vision. It's really quite good for that kind of money. It's if you do Atmos with it, it's five speakers around you and a subwoofer and two speakers overhead, so you get that immersive quality. And you know, $7,479, I think, is what the list price is. I'm going to be talking next week about Black Friday. I'm going to see what I can find. You know, I mean, I'll go to these Black Friday websites and find interesting things in my domain, and hopefully there will be some AV receivers in there. It depends. You know, sometimes I find stuff that I wouldn't recommend at any price, so I don't mention those. So, you know, sure, you can get something really, really cheap, but it's going to be really, really bad. So what's the point? I say no. Scooter X says the Pixel 2 XL demo phones at Verizon stores run a software demo 24/7. So of course they've got burn in. Well, of course they do. User 4969, do I own a 4K TV? Yes, I do. The Sony 65-inch A1E OLED. Aloha, Waikiki Guru. Good to see you. Sybil, live long and prosper. Bassdrum, my LG OLED also has an automatic brightness limiter. Yes, that's common to all OLED TVs. If you leave a static image on after a couple minutes, the screen automatically dims the entire screen. Oh, that's kind of interesting. I didn't know about. I'll have to figure that. I'll have to look into that. User 7706, yes, the Denon AVR-S730W AVR I like quite a bit. Twisted Mister, I think, was the one in the chat room who said, you know, any receiver these days is going to drive just about any speaker. So you want to spend more time thinking about what speakers to get. And in a sense, that's true. I would have to agree with that more or less. The speakers are going to have more impact on the sound, and you're going to hear a different sound depending on the speakers you get more than depending upon the AVR you get. And I'm currently working. Next week, I will have on AVS Forum a list of the best speakers that we've reviewed this year. We already have up there now a list of the best TVs we reviewed this year. So I had meant to mention that on the show. Didn't quite get to do that. But anyone who's shopping for a TV, we've got the list of the best TVs we've reviewed. And the next one to go up is the best speakers we've reviewed. And that covers a wide range of prices, too, all the way from the ELAC Debut B6, which is, I think, $280 a pair for a pair of bookshelf speakers, up to, oh, I forget what the most expensive one is. I'm still ordering them in terms of price. But we've reviewed stuff very inexpensive and pretty expensive. Never terribly expensive, never like astronomical, but let's see here. Jack says, afternoon, is your TV the same as the 55 Sony OLED KD55A1? I don't recognize that model number. That's probably a European model number or Asian maybe. Where do you live there, Jack? I don't know if it's exactly the same one. It looks like it might be. Has the A1 in it anyway. If it's an OLED, then yeah, it's probably the same, but just a different product number for a different part of the world, because a lot of manufacturers do that. They'll have one model number for the U.S. and a different model number for Europe and a different model number for Asia. So that's how that goes. Let's see. Only got about 30 seconds left, so I will say happy Saturday. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you, Scott. You too.
Look forward to talking to you next week about Black Friday.
Yay. Is that a good time to buy a TV?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not as good as Super Bowl, but
right.
Almost
right. January is usually a little better. Okay, good. Thanks, Scott. Have a good one.
You bet.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still use Skype. Our website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And please use that if you're, you know, you don't have to write anything down that I'm talking about. You can find everything we say there on the website, techguylabs.com. Update on the iPhone X. I've had it now for a little more than a week. Still in love. Still depressed about the price, because really this is the iPhone everybody should be buying, in my opinion. I know some people like smaller phones. This is a little bigger than the iPhone 7 and 8, but it's a little smaller than the 7 Plus and the 8 Plus, kind of in the between. I feel like it's just about the right size. And the iPhone X, of course, it's an edge-to-edge screen, doesn't have any home button or fingerprint reader anymore, doesn't really have much of a bezel. The idea is that you're using the entire front face of the device as a screen. This is the future for all phones, I think. Google's doing something similar with its Pixel 2 XL. LG and Samsung, the Note 8, for instance, all the way to the edge. And I like that. Apple, though, decided not to put a fingerprint reader on the back. That's what the other guys are doing. They decided to use Face ID. And the Face ID works very well. You'll still want to. In fact, I recommend that you set up not merely a 6-digit PIN, but a longer numeric code, or better yet, a passphrase. Obviously, you want to have something that you can enter fairly easily, because as good as Face ID is, there are times when you have to enter the PIN or passcode anyway. But I think for security reasons, it's a good idea to have more than a six-digit numeric code. That's not completely easy to guess, but it's a little easier than 7 or 8 or 9 digits would be. And it's a lot easier than a random password. The problem with random passwords, hard to enter, right? The front-facing Face ID cameras, though, are pretty cool. In fact, Apple has updated its Clips app. And if you have an iPhone 10, it would be worth getting the Clips app to try it out. It Clips is their video app. The idea is kind of like a simple video editor for social media where you could put text on it and you could do effects and so forth. But one of the effects it does is pretty darn cool. It's only in selfie mode because the Face ID stuff is all in the notch at the top facing you. But in selfie mode, it can do special effects. It can put you, for instance, in the Millennium Falcon, in a 3D version of the Millennium Falcon, and process the picture in such a way that you look like Princess Leia's video coming out of the R2 droid. And it does it in real time, which is really very remarkable. It's kind of a show-off feature that shows off the capabilities of Face ID and mapping the world around it, because this is augmented reality. You're in another reality. But also the amazing speed of the A11 Bionic processor in the iPhone X. Because, well, somebody pointed out that, remember the old Wham video? Or no, it was Aha, right? Take On Me. Remember that, where they're pencil drawings? They walk into a freezer and then suddenly they're in pencil drawing land. That took months to animate by hand using a technique they call rotoscope, where you take video and you illustrate on top of it, then you get rid of the video and just leave the illustration. Well, Apple can do this in real time very, very well, automatically. And it's pretty darn impressive. It's a show-off thing because, well, it's not the most useful thing in the world unless, you know, you're making music videos, 80s retro music videos. But it does show the capabilities of this amazing phone. I think we're just going to see more and more as time goes by with Apple. And I was talking with Evan, who's in the studio today visiting. He said, well, what's this going to mean for the iPad? And I hadn't really thought about that, but it's a very good point. At this point, Apple's iPad is the old platform, the one with the bezels, the frame around the screen, and the home button that doubles as a fingerprint reader, Touch ID, and that's not the future for the iPhone. I would imagine Apple's going to be looking at, which I think would be really incredible, replacing the iPad's LCD screen with an OLED screen. It would cost a lot, but they make them that big. It could easily do that. And replacing the fingerprint reader with Touch ID and going edge to edge. And that, then it would use the same user interface that the iPhone X does. The iPhone X is kind of a singleton. It's got a user interface that's different than any other Apple iOS device. You know, different swipe gestures and things like that. And I think that Apple's got to move not just the iPhone into that direction, but the iPad as well, which would bode very well for the iPad. We haven't heard any rumors of that, but the iPad sales have slowed because, well, there's not that much difference, at least cosmetically, between the original iPad and today's iPad. There's just the slightest difference. If Apple wants to sell a bunch of new iPads to people who are happy with their old iPads, they need to make a change that makes everybody dissatisfied. People look at their old iPad and go, oh, that's so 2010. I need something newer. And that would be one way to do it, wouldn't it? Not to mention how powerful it would be as an augmented reality device if it had that Face ID, not just facing you, but facing out. So I think there's a lot of room for Apple to grow into this new platform. It's a very, As you know, I think a lot of people think that I'm an Apple fanboy, but even more people think that I hate Apple. It's neither. I try to be as objective about every. I don't work for these companies. I work for you, and I don't particularly love or hate any company. I try to be as objective as possible about all these technologies. But I admit it. When the cost came out of the iPhone, starting at $1,000, and the one you want probably is $1,150, I went, gosh. That's an awful lot of money. It's going to be hard to recommend this. Well, I recommend it. It's so impressive. And get ready, because a OLED high-end iPad with Face ID and all these new features, that's going to double the cost. You're going to see a $1,500 iPad all of a sudden. And I'll have the same reaction, which is, well, I don't want to recommend it. It's so darn expensive. I hate to tell people they need to buy something this expensive. And for many people, you know, it's really us weird enthusiasts that care. For most people, everybody I talk to, they go, I'm happy with my iPhone 6. That's fine. I don't need another one. My mom loves her iPhone 6 because she wants the headphone jack, so she's not going to upgrade. But for people who want to try the latest technology and kind of peek into the future, this iPhone 10 and I think what will be the next generation iPad are a really interesting look at what's ahead. And, of course, the rumors are strong now and kind of backed up by the enthusiasm coming from the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, about augmented reality. The rumors are strong that Apple is about 3 years out, I would say between 3 and 5 years out, to coming out with augmented reality spectacles. This is the holy grail. If they look like regular glasses, in fact, if you wear glasses, if you could put your corrective lenses in them, but look around and see things, information superimposed on the real world in a way that no one knows you're seeing that, with decent battery life, decent cameras, if Apple could do that, and I know really all the tech companies, including Google and Microsoft, are racing to do this, if Apple can do that, they will have the next big thing. And that's what every company is looking for at this point. You can only coast so far on your existing product. As strong as the iPhone is, you got to figure out, well, what's next? Rumors now are very strong that Apple's next is a pair of eyeglasses that show you the world in a unique way. That would be very interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call's next. Hey, I want to talk, as long as we're talking about great holiday gifts, let me talk about our sponsor, the Eero. This would be if you have family or friends who complain about Wi-Fi, or maybe spouses, that's why I originally got my first Eero. Same thing, was Lisa would say, the internet's down again. I go, oh. Because we have a fairly spread out house, and there were places in the house you'd go where you just wouldn't, you know, the router wouldn't reach. But along comes Eero, and it really is a better kind of Wi-Fi. I have been so happy. We're now using the second generation Eero, which is even better than the first. Their motto is never think about Wi-Fi again. Now, isn't that kind of would be the ideal, right? The internet just works. No more buffering. No more, hey, the internet's down. What's going on? It just works. Eero was the first kind of commercial mesh system, enterprise-grade mesh system, that people could buy and put in their home. It uses the Eero app on iOS or Android. It walks you through the install. Make sure that, you know, each of the – what you get is a base unit and then two satellite units. The new Eero beacons are really easy because you just plug into the wall. There's no wire or anything. You just plug them into the wall. They make a nice night light, so I keep them in the hall. Of course, they're protected by state-of-the-art encryption. And here's one of the reasons you want an Eero. Unlike many other routers, Eero keeps it up to date all the time. They're fixing issues, protecting you, making it more secure. And, for instance, with the crack Wi-Fi vulnerability, you probably have devices that are not patched yet and may not be patched for some time. Eero patched within 24 hours of the vulnerability being revealed. Eero patched every Eero device. So, as usual, I never had to worry at all about my Eero. I mean, it's just always up to date. They also updated to make it more functional. In fact, there was a big update with the new Eero that I really like. Here's the Eero interface on my phone. But it says everything looks good. It shows 39 connected devices. Yes, we use Wi-Fi heavily. You see the status of all the three Eero units, the base unit and the two beacons. You see your internet speed, tests it periodically, like every day, to make sure you're getting what you paid for. And I love when you look at the devices, every device can be assigned to a person. And this is really great. They call this the family profiles. So, for instance, if you've got a child, this is fantastic. I can pair this to my Echo, and say, Echo, pause Michael's Wi-Fi. And his Wi-Fi stops. Even better, of course, I have his Wi-Fi stopping at night. So I don't have to worry about, him using it in the middle of the night. At 10 p.m., the internet goes off. He's got safe filters, which are fantastic. Safe search, filters against adult, illegal, or violent content. Yes, those are all turned on. He's 14. But for us, we get filters, too. Of course, we have access, to all of those things. But we get filters against malware and dangerous stuff that comes in over the internet. You can have a schedule, bedtime schedule, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., Sunday through Thursday. Bedtime weekend schedule, when he's not in school, he can stay up a little bit later. These are all things that you would say, I want a modern Wi-Fi device to do. They started in 2016, so they've been doing this longer than anybody else. Since then, they've learned from hundreds of thousands of systems, and they are constantly improving. The second generation Eero is tri-band, which means it's faster. It's got a third 5 gigahertz radio, twice as fast as the predecessor, and you can do more simultaneously. Look, I've got 39 connected devices, and they all work flawlessly. And now they have a Thread radio built in, which means you can connect to low-power devices like locks and doorbells and other sensors better than ever. And it's easy if, each Eero device covers about 1,500 square feet. If you want to add more, if you've got a tough spot upstairs or downstairs or maybe out in the garage you want to get Wi-Fi access out there, it's easy to add another beacon. You just buy a beacon and plug it in. This would be a great gift for yourself for the holidays or for family and friends. Free overnight shipping to the U.S. and Canada right now when you go to eero.com. And select overnight shipping at checkout, then enter Tech Guy to make it free. And that's the signal they'll use to know that you heard this on the Tech Guy show. So please do that. Eero.com. Don't forget the offer code, one word, Tech Guy, to get free overnight shipping. And tell them you heard about it from me, the Tech Guy. I love my Eero. I actually got an Eero for my mom as well. We set her up in Rhode Island because she was having Wi-Fi problems. I said, well, Mom, I got the solution. She's got my old Eero. I have the new Eero. It's good for her. Eero.com. Don't forget, overnight shipping when you use the offer code TECHGUY. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, and you can do that from U.S. and Canada toll-free, or use Skype out to call that number, and it'll be toll-free from anywhere in the world. Going on to line 4, Carrie in Long Beach. Hi, Carrie. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. I want to give you some kudos about Fracture.
Okay, we should mention Fracture is a sponsor of some of the podcasts we do, not of the radio show, but they make a pretty neat product where they print your photos on glass.
And a friend of mine, made several trips to Cedar Sinai. Her husband has cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And in the waiting area, they've got a koi pond. And she and her husband took a photograph of the koi pond. And as it turns out, her husband passed away. So this photo was very important to her.
Oh, my.
And she shared the photo with me, and I used Pixelmator and Luminar to touch it up, fine-tune it, and ordered the large print on Fracture.
Which is really big. And it's poster-sized.
Yes. When it came when it was delivered, I didn't open it. I waited until I got to her office and showed and opened it up there, and she was just blown away.
Oh, that's
nice. And for an hour, neither one of us could take our eyes off.
Isn't it when you print on glass, there's something happens to that photo that really comes to life?
Yeah, especially this one, because the koi was the koi pond itself had a black bottom, and the koi actually looked like they were floating in space
in the picture. Oh, neat. Actually, that's a plug not just for Fracture, but for Pixelmator and what was the other program you used?
Luminar.
Luminar. Two
mostly
excellent
I did it
programs.
On Pixelmator.
Yeah.
With Pixelmator, I used layers and multiply mode. to enhance it after, I mean, to make it pop a little bit more, make the blacks pop, you know, get a deeper black colors.
We've talked about how Adobe is kind of upsetting some people, especially photographers, by moving not only to the subscription mode, but also heavily changing the user interface of Lightroom. Although I have to say I'm increasingly liking the new Lightroom. But a lot of people are looking at alternatives, and Pixelmator has been around for a while, both on iOS and on the Macintosh. In fact, they're doing a big update to Pixelmator. It comes out at the end of the month, Pixelmator Pro. This is a basically a Photoshop for a fraction of the cost. It's a very nice app. It is not available for Windows, alas. That would be a nice thing. But they've really done a very nice job, especially with their iOS app, I think.
The Pixelmator Pro looks like a new user interface to make it seem more like Lightroom or Luminar Aurora.
Everybody's good. Yeah, and I love the Mac Fun stuff. Luminar and Aurora is really good, too. You're obviously a serious photographer because you're paying attention to all this
stuff. No, I'm just an amateur. But one thing about the Luminar is that each year they do a major update. And if you already own the product, it's only $39 to get the new version. Yeah. Otherwise, if you're a new purchaser, a new customer to MacFun, it's $69, I think. But once you're a user of any of their products, you get the discount. I'm crazy in love with Aurora and Luminar and Pixelmator.
Aurora is our friend Trey Ratcliffe worked on that with them. It's a high dynamic range, or HDR. A filter that's very powerful, very sophisticated. And Luminar is kind of their Lightroom/Photoshop clone. The nice thing about Mac Fun stuff, despite the name, I think they're changing the name, is it works on Windows and Mac. I wish Pixelmator were available for Windows too, but I have to say this is what's happening, and this is why competition is a great thing, because and really it's come down more to software now, because it costs less to do software than it does hardware. We're really seeing some innovative stuff happening in software and apps particularly. And Pixelmator and Mac Fun are really leaders in the photo editing field. So thank you for that plug. And I'll thank you on behalf of our podcast sponsor, Fracture, because they, they, I'm sure, are very glad to hear that. In fact, if they have a thing where they share some of the best pictures that have been sent to Fracture. You should send them an email, because I'd love to see that koi picture myself.
Yeah, I should. It's a very poignant, meaningful photo for her.
Right.
And I was really amazed. I pumped up the resolution. It was shot on an iPhone 6.
Amazing.
And
wow.
I used Pixelmator to increase the resolution.
Right.
And it came out just gorgeous.
Right.
So thanks again to you and to Fracture. They've made a very special moment, you know.
That's very powerful. My condolences to your friend, but I'm glad that something beautiful came out of it as well. That's nice.
It sure did. Yeah. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Thanks for letting us know. Yeah, that's really great. Lincoln, Palm Springs, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lincoln.
Howdy, Leo.
Welcome.
How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Well, we're having some problems. We've had different computers in the past and lived with them, but the last one finally got to the point where we couldn't deal with it anymore, and we have bought a new HP. I want to know the best way to set this up and to operate it to avoid as many problems as possible.
Windows 10, first of all, you're going to like it better. Of course, a new computer, you always have fewer problems. HP does – my favorite kind of Windows 10 PC is what Microsoft calls their signature edition, and Microsoft offers them. Lenovo, I think HP might. Those are basically pure Windows 10 with merely the appropriate drivers installed by the manufacturer, and none of this trialware. HP's kind of notorious. Actually, was there a lot of like McAfee antivirus and trialware on your?
They offered just a couple of things and a 30-day trial.
Yeah, I uninstall that stuff right away.
Okay.
It's fine. I mean, the trial doesn't go away, but the idea is the first thing to do is kind of clean up that install that has all that trialware. And by the way, Microsoft also bundles trialware in. There's Candy Crush Soda, you know.
Yeah, we noticed that.
Skype and stuff. But some of that stuff is what I call a stub. It's not the whole program. It's just a little bit of a program that says, when you click it, it'll say, okay, now download this from the Windows Store. But it's an ad. And I don't like ads in my... Yeah, don't mix ads into my operating system. So, but I hope that doesn't happen too. You know, I mean, Microsoft's slowly edging towards that. They are, you know, in some of their things like OneDrive, they're starting to pop up little reminders to try other things. I just wish they wouldn't do that. And of course, Microsoft and Google are fighting over which browser to use when you launch Chrome. Microsoft says, you sure you don't want to use Edge? When you launch Edge, it says, you sure you don't want to use Chrome? It's just driving me nuts.
Yeah.
So turn all that stuff off. That's the first thing I do. I don't think you have to worry too much about maintenance tools. The days of defragging are gone. The days of optimizing. I think mostly back up your data. That's always important, as you know. I can't think of anything else really that you need to do to a stock Windows 10 install. Once you've cleaned it up, make an image copy, back it up, and enjoy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Trying to think of any, you know, I used to recommend moving, you know, creating partitions and all that stuff. And that's, especially in a laptop these days, is really, it's more trouble than it's worth probably. I think basically cleaning off all that stuff. And if you can, make an image of the, you know,
that's what I wanted to know about.
Yeah. What I usually do is, you've got the image of the install because they give you a recovery and make that. I should have said that right away. Make those recovery discs. Get a USB key and make that recovery disc. They don't give you the recovery discs anymore, but make
them. Not anymore, no.
Yeah. You really want to make sure you have that. And then having done that, then what I would do is clean it off because the recovery is going to have all that stuff on it. Clean it off. Install the app, only the programs you always install, whether it's Office or whatever it is that you know you're going to want, that you always install, and then make an image of that. And now Windows has built in, and I thought they were going to take it out in the Fall Creators Update, but apparently they didn't. It's a system restore. You can make a system restore, basically an image of your whole drive. You don't need to buy anything. Now, I use terabytes backup to do that, but that costs money, terabyte drive image. But there are other programs as well that cost money. But Microsoft has its own Windows 7 style backup, they call it. So if you go to backup, it's kind of crazy. Microsoft is kind of funny about this, and they did say they were going to take this out. But if you type Windows key in backup, you'll see go to backup and restore Windows 7.
Yeah, I noticed that was on there.
Yeah, that is an image backup.
Okay.
So that you'll even say create a system image and create a system repair disk. You can do those. And what you'll need to do is connect an external drive, a USB key or a don't do it on a DVD. I would do it on a hard drive. And so create it to an external drive, and it'll make an image that you can use to restore your computer. And then, but if you want to do more than that, then something like terabytes drive image, which is the one Steve Gibson recommends. That's the one I use. But there are others, including Ease US has a free one, EASEUS.
Okay.
And then what I would do, the problem with, of course, that image backup is it's not a backup, really. It's just a way to get back to the clean install.
Yeah.
So then you have to make sure you continue to back up from that point on. So you're just keeping that in case you want a system boot, because a system boot will allow you to fix things, you know, do a repair and stuff. So that's why you make that recovery drive.
Would you put that on a
USB key? Is the easiest, yeah. A modern computer will be able to boot to that. And that's if you want to repair your system. That's very useful. And then remember, you also have a system partition on the computer as well. So That's there as well for repair. But I think having an external one in case something goes wrong with a hard drive, that kind of thing.
Okay. You recommend just going with what Windows builds in for security nowadays?
Yes, that's all you need. You do not need. In fact, I strongly recommend against installing an antivirus. Use Windows Defender. You're good there.
This thing says it has 128 gigabytes SSD plus a terabyte.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I thought that would be interesting to play with.
Oh, one more thing. Web7777 reminds me. Set up an administrator account that you don't use, and then use a standard user account for daily operations. Both of those are very useful. But now it's time to change gears because we're headed abroad. And there he is, Johnny Jet. He's been all over the place. Hey, Johnny, where are you
How
now?
You
You're somewhere else.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Oh, yeah. I've had a whirlwind week. I'll let you try and guess where I am right now.
I see a beach. You're in Waikiki.
I was in Waikiki, but now I'm in Florida.
Oh, all right. Very nice. Looks beautiful. You were in Waikiki for 3 hours.
Yeah, on Tuesday. I went L.A., San Francisco, Honolulu, back to L.A., then to Nashville for a conference, I'm in Florida for another conference.
Earning his title, Johnny Jet. He's our travel guru, joins us each week to talk about traveling better with tech, websites, and apps that can help you. But I'm very curious. The reason you were in Honolulu is you were on the last
United 747, Flight 747. They retired the Boeing 747, and now only Delta has one left, and they're about to retire it. But it was a special flight, and United gave it such an amazing farewell that I just could not pass it up, even if it meant that I just could go for 3 hours and turn around.
I saw the CEO of United was checking people in, which is pretty cool.
It was awesome. Yeah, he shook everyone's hand. He got on the plane. He didn't even fly on the plane.
Wow.
He just shook everyone's hand, and they did a really nice job on my homepage. I have tons of pictures from the flight, and so it makes people feel like they were there, but they really did. Everyone got a lay when we got off the plane, including the plane, as you can see right there.
And a giant lay.
Yeah, a giant lay. That was amazing. And I walked off the plane with the world's most frequent flyer ever, Tom Stuecker. He's flown 18.9 million miles,
wow,
all on United. And he said it was the fastest 5-hour flight he's ever been on.
Yeah, you don't want it to end, do you?
Yeah. It really was an amazing trip.
Did they – oh, you got on – that's interesting.
That was me in the 80s.
Oh, this is an old picture. I was going to say on a 747 when they were first starting out, right?
Yeah, that was my first international trip. My first flight overseas was to Hong Kong on the United 747. I used to be afraid to fly, and so getting on that, I had a special bond with it. And it was just a really memorable day.
Captain David Smith, the pilot, I would imagine he's one of their most senior, if not the senior pilot in the fleet, right?
I don't think he is. I would think so. Yeah, he looked like a young guy.
Wouldn't you want that privilege? My gosh.
Yeah, I think I spoke to the flight attendants, and they said it wasn't all on seniority. Huh. The one woman said, I'm actually one of the younger ones, and she had 42 years of seniority. I was like, really?
Wow.
I was like, how does that happen?
And she's one of the younger ones.
That's what she said.
No, I don't believe that. Oscar Munoz, there you are. A great picture with the CEO of United. Yeah. He shook everybody's hands. Stay on. I would have taken the 1A seat. Oh, look, you're sitting up front.
Zach got 1A.
Zach Honig. Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, he took 1A. And they did a flyover of the Golden Gate Bridge, and it was insane. On that side of the plane, I could not see it. I was in 6H, as you can see from that photo. I'm not complaining. I had a
So who
a great
were the
flight.
People on here? Most of these people bought their tickets.
The tickets sold out in like 10 minutes, I think, that United said. But they invited some industry people, and I was fortunate to be one of them.
Congratulations. This looks like so much fun. Look at that!
I just put it in the chat room, and also I just put in my link for my app of the week.
What's that, Johnny?
Which is the first Red Cross First Aid app. You know, we just hired a babysitter this week to watch Jack, and I asked her if she, you know, knew CPR. She goes, "Oh yeah, you can see my, here's my card." And she said, you know, she got it from the Red Cross, and they offer classes, at least in California, they start about $75. But she said, in addition to that, she uses this Red Cross First Aid app all the time, and it's free on iOS and Android because just to brush up, because it has life-saving videos, it has simple step-by-step advice on everything, including allergies, asthma attack, bleeding, broken bones, burns, choking.
You really want that on your phone for emergencies, yeah.
And you don't need, and you do not need to have a signal. So if you're traveling, you can just quickly look at it, and it will tell you what to do. So if you've been bitten by a snake or other bugs or a jellyfish, it will tell you what to do. And so I think every traveler should download it.
Downloading it right now. It's called their emergency app.
No, this one is their Red Cross First Aid app.
So they have so many.
They have so many. I've actually recommended the Tornado app about, you know, 6 months ago when I met some Texans and said, you should download this app because that's what all the Texans use.
Right.
And so then I thought it would have been the same app, but it's not. They're all separate. But definitely download the First Aid app by Red Cross.
All right. I am doing that. And I thought I'd get emergency alerts while I'm there. They have a lot of good stuff. That's great.
It's really, and actually on my flight up to San Francisco before that Hawaiian flight, you know, we're sitting on the runway and I spent the whole time looking at that. Actually, while we're on the flight, instead of breaking out my laptop because there was such little leg room, I just used my phone and just reviewed everything.
You weren't on that nice 747, obviously.
not on that one.
Were you in a middle seat?
No, I was on a 37, but I was stuck in a window seat.
Oh.
So, and I got a website for you. So last week, the Society of American Travel Writers, SATW, they had their annual convention, and the best travel blog went to curbfreewithcoreylee.com. So it's curbfree, CURBFREE, with Corey, CORY, and then LEE.com. I'll put this in the show notes or the chat room, and I'll tweet it out.
What does he do?
But this guy, he's a very special person. So he was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy at age 2, and he's been in a wheelchair ever since, but it's never slowed him down. And I see him all around the world at conferences, and I bet he's in the top 1% of Americans that have traveled. He's traveled to over 20 countries, 6 continents.
He's only 27.
Only 27. Amazing. And now he's going to keynote TEDx next year. And his website gives all kinds of tips on how to travel, you know, in a wheelchair. And so, you know, it's not for everybody, obviously, but for the ones that are.
What a great resource.
He is an inspiration, and it's just valuable information.
Yeah, because the ability to go places like Estonia or Copenhagen or Quebec and be able to go where you want, curb free, as they say, is fantastic. Yep. I think that is a great site.
He's a great guy.
I was going to be mad that they didn't give it to johnnyjet.com, but you know what?
No, I am not mad at all.
Yeah, this is a good one.
I'm so happy for this kid, and I just think he's really inspiring a lot of people, including myself.
Best travel blog. Nice job, Corey. Curb free with Corey Lee. If you Google curb free, CURB free, you'll find it very quickly. Yep. And it looks like a great site if people, you know, if you're in a chair or you know somebody who is, you're looking for accessible travel. If you want to bring, you know, your folks on a trip with you, he talks about cruising, the lowdown and accessible cruising. And a whole
section on travel tips. And all the places that he's been, all the countries and the tips for those places. So definitely spend a few minutes, even if you're not. Sign up for, follow him on social media. He's fun to watch. And again, it's inspiring.
I like this. One day in St. Petersburg as a wheelchair user. That's awesome. Good job, Corey Lee.
Yes,
congratulations, sure. And thank you, Johnny Jet.
Thank you.
What are you doing in Florida?
I'm at another conference, and Natalie and Jack are with me this time. They didn't go to Hawaii with me, but I flew back, picked them up,
and went back to
the airport.
The cry of the wild Jack.
Yeah, he's back here, and we were in Tennessee for the Best Western Conference yesterday.
Go to johnnyjet.com. Johnny's website is full of great travel tips, but also subscribe to his newsletters. You can get all the bulletins of all the great travel deals out there and follow him on Twitter, too. Thank you, Johnny. Safe travels.
Thank you. Take care.
Leo Laporte. the tech guy. That's nice. That's nice. You are this. Is this the high season for travel writers, or just by chance, or because you're?
It's just a busy week. I don't know. Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot going on.
Well, I'm glad you could bring the family with you. That's nice.
It's part of my deal. Usually I say, I don't go unless they can go, but I wasn't going to drag them to Hawaii for 3 hours.
No.
And so we're here. And now nice. we got to make another stop. We're going to another city tomorrow.
And you're not going to tell me, are you?
No.
somebody in the chat room saying, have you ever been to Cuba?
I was supposed to be on that very first cruise to Cuba last year with Carnival, the first American cruise. But that's when Natalie was pregnant and Zika was out, so we didn't take a chance. So I'd never been, the short story. And, now they have new rules coming out that just came out yesterday.
We had, as you know, a Christmas trip to Cuba planned, and I canceled it because I was afraid of this.
But if you had your trips, if you had your tickets and everything booked before November 9th, I think it was, everything's fine.
Oh, okay.
But after that, if you're booked now, there's a lot more restrictions. You can't stay at certain hotels, ones that are owned by the Cuban military. A lot are owned by the Europeans. So I just was just reading about it.
Yeah.
And I'm so close.
I should have gone. You could see it practically. Yeah, I should have gone because it might get harder and harder to go. But okay.
Yep.
All right. Hey, thank you, Johnny.
Hey, take care. Have a great week.
All right. Thanks.
Bye bye.
Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. The phone number if you want to talk high tech. On the line next, Dave from Ridgecrest, California. Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good for an old guy. I got a problem. Actually, it's not my problem. It's my son's problem. But I'm interested in helping him try to figure out what's going on.
Okay.
It has to do with his cell phone. I have, myself, a track phone, and it has all the old keys and everything on it, and there's a feature I can lock the keyboard so that I can push all the keys and nothing happens except the dial lights up. He's got a newer one. I think it's track phone, but I'm not sure because he's at work today. But it keeps butt dialing, and what it butt dials is 911.
Oh, that's not good.
And it's getting serious because
showed up. Oh, they'll get mad. Yeah, no, that's not good. And, of course, you don't want to tie up 911's resources unnecessarily. So the reason your track phone has that feature is those buttons are physical and exposed.
Yeah, right.
On all the newer phone, and I would imagine that any phone with physical buttons like that would have a lock because, obviously, you're going to sit on them and mash them.
Right.
But if he has one of the new smartphones with a glass screen.
Well, it's not a smartphone, but it's got a flat, smooth face.
Any phone, does it fold in half? Is it a flip phone?
No.
So any phone like a candy bar phone where the buttons are exposed has a lock. It has to, otherwise this would happen.
Yeah.
Modern phones, the glass front smartphones, don't. They tend not to. But they have locked screens, and as a result, the presumption is, well, it's the screen is off when it's in your pocket, and so it's not going to. But I have to say that doesn't work. I get a lot of butt dials, mostly because what happens is people text you or call you or whatever, and then forget to lock the screen, just slip in their pocket, and immediately it's going to text you or call you again and again and again and again. But on a modern phone, that's much less of a problem. Any phone with physical keys, though, must have a way to lock those keys. If you don't know the brand, I can't really help you, but I probably couldn't help you anyway. I'm not an expert. I haven't had I call them dumb phones as opposed to a smartphone, but I think they call them feature phones. I haven't had a feature phone. Well, my last one was 10 years ago when the iPhone came out. Ever since the iPhone came out, I've been using smartphones. So I am not an expert on how you can lock that phone. Anybody want to help? Again, it just, since we don't know the brand, I don't know what we can say, except that it's got to have a lock. It must. Ben in Orange, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Pretty good.
What can I do for you, my friend?
Well, hey, I got this weird keyboard mapping issue, and it has to do with the number pad and the arrow pad.
Yeah.
So when I'm typing numbers on my numpad, if I type the 2, it acts as a down arrow. And if I move over to the arrow pad and hit the down arrow, it types a 2.
They're swapped. Now, is on your number pad, besides the 2, does it have a down arrow marking?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you're supposed to be able to do either. And there's a button which you should look for. It's probably a physical button called Num Lock.
Oh, yeah. Now, I played with all that stuff, and it happens with the 2, 4, 8, and 6.
Yeah, because those are arrow keys. Those are directional keys. If Num Lock is on, there'll be number keys. If it's off, there'll be arrow keys. But you can also change that setting in BIOS in the setup when you first start up the computer. You can say what the default mode would be. If you never want to use those as arrow keys, if you always want to use them as a number, make sure that it starts up with Num Lock on. And that will always, it will always start up in the way that you expect it to. A lot of keyboards start up in the other mode, oddly enough. I'm looking at, this is an interesting thread somebody in the chat room has given me from Microsoft.com. That's Macintosh focused. Never mind. This is a Windows machine. It's Num Lock. So play with it. But a more permanent setting would be in the system setup. We used to call it BIOS. Remember where you boot up the machine and you have to watch carefully as the machine starts up or Google the brand of the machine to figure out how to get in a setup. It's hitting the escape or delete or F11 or F7 or F2 key. Those are generally the keys used, but you don't know which. I've had this happen where you go, I don't know how to get in a setup here. What? And you just mash all the keys and you figure it out. I'm not sure if you want to do this, but you could. Keyboard mapping is all soft. In other words, the computer doesn't know what 2 is. It looks up in a table what that keystroke is. It sees the keystroke as A000 or something like that. It gets a hexadecimal code, the software does, and then looks it up in a table and says, oh, that must be the number 2. So you can remap your keyboard completely arbitrarily to anything you want. You can see this in the control panel where you can choose different keyboards like the Dvorak keyboard, which is not a Q-W-E-R-T-Y style keyboard. Problem with that, of course, is the keycaps on your keyboard won't match if you change that. Maybe an easier way to do this is a really useful program that everybody who has Windows should get because it's free. It's called Auto Hotkey. And it allows you to reassign keystrokes completely arbitrarily. They call it a keyboard macro program. So if turning off or turning on Num Lock doesn't fix it, if going into BIOS doesn't fix it, you could, I guess, look at keyboard mapping software and create a new map. But I like Auto Hotkey. It allows you to bind in a very simple way your keys to whatever actions you want, including things like typing your address or your full name. And it's free. It's a very nice, useful little tool. I think a lot of, it's something we old-timers used all the time when we installed Windows. And I think it's not common. The younger generation doesn't know about it as much as they did. But, boy, it is fantastic. It's a little tricky because the configuration is stored in a text file. I think that's superior because it means, you have ultimate control. You don't have to record keystrokes and all that. You can, but you don't have to. It's open source. It's GPL, which means the source code is fully published and available. Highly recommended. So worst case, you can actually just use Auto Hotkey and say, whenever I type 2, make it 2, not an arrow. And anytime I use the arrow keys, make it up, not 2. easy enough to fix up with AutoHotkey. Little bit of a learning curve, but not bad. And they have excellent documentation. And it's free, and you might as well have it anyway. Everybody who uses Windows ought to have that. Let's go to Joe. He's in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Hello, Joe.
Hi. I'm thinking about buying a Christmas present, electronic Christmas present, and I don't know the difference between a Google Home, an Echo, and an Echo Dot. Which one would make the best present?
So the Echo and the Echo Dot are the same. Amazon sells a number of different form factors or physical factors for the Echo. It's all the same services. But you can get one that looks like an alarm clock. You can get one that has a screen on it, which is my favorite. It's the most expensive one, also $230. The Dot is the least expensive. It's under $50. But it needs a speaker to be attached to it. And then the Echo, the cylinder, the new Echo, they've really improved that. I think that's $100, $110. That's also very good. But that's Amazon Voice Services. Then the other one is Google and Google Voice Services. By the way, Google has a number of form factors now, too. There's the standard Google Home, but they also have a Home Mini, which is like a dot. It's like looks like a little donut. In fact, the pink one looks exactly like a donut. Don't eat it. And then they have a bigger one called the Home Max that is intended to be like a stereo speaker, like sound really good. So, yeah, this is I think it's a great holiday gift. There are differences between the capabilities of the Echo and the Google devices, of course. Echo is really good at Amazon services. So if you want to buy stuff, if you want to listen to Audible books, which Amazon owns, if you want to, I mean, it's really good for things like that. Google does many of those things. Can't buy anything on Amazon, but you can buy. Google allows you to buy stuff from Walmart and Target and other places. I wouldn't say it's a very good shopping device, but it's. But if you've ever used the Google Assistant, it's a smarter assistant than the Echo. You can ask it general factual questions that Echo will stumble on. I think they're both very interesting, and I like them both. Generally, I'd say use the Echo. It's been around the longest. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's an interesting difference between. So does that? I know there's a lot more, but is that? That's a start anyway. Is there more you'd like to know? Oh, he's gone. Oh, I can't continue the jawbone. I've got to tell you all about Capterra, our sponsor for this portion of the Tech Guy podcast. Capterra saves me a lot of time. People often call me and say, "Leo, I have a dog sitting business, and I need what's the best business software for my dog sitting?" And I don't know. Fortunately, Capterra does. Capterra is a free directory of business software in every 400-plus categories. Let me just look at the category list. I mean, it's just everything you could – everything from A-B testing to a yoga studio management, anti-spam software, association management, bakery software, folks. People run their bakeries now with bakery software. Streamline bakery software, When I Work, Just Food, ERP, Jolt. So how do you know, how do you find this? You could Google it, but much better go to Capterra.com. Don't waste your precious daylight sifting through a sea of search results. All you got to do, and I love this. So let's say I'm looking for bakery software. I go to the page. I can then say, I can filter the results. I mean, believe it or not, there's dozens of programs. Cake Boss. Bake Wheel, Baker's Labeling Software, Global Bake, Flexi Bake. These are all bakery programs, bakery reconciliation, bakery management system, baking it. But that's awful lot. Well, here what we do, we're going to filter it. Just 4 stars, because they have, by the way, hundreds of thousands of real reviews. So you don't have to guess which is the best. You say, well, I only have a small bakery. I want to have it be web-based for 2 to 9 employees, and I want to manage inventory, calculate labor cost, and make nutrition labels. Then filter it, and it narrows it down. Well, you got to get FlexiBake then. Oh, FlexiBake, that's the one. And then read the reviews from real people talking about it, real bakers in this case. Look at this. These are real reviews. They're carefully vetted. hundreds of thousands of them. 2018's on its way. Make sure you get the software your business needs today to help you do better. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com. Hundreds of categories, hundreds of thousands of reviews. Everything you need to find the right business software for your business, no matter what it is. And by the way, did I mention it's free? No salesman will call. You don't have to give them any information about yourself. They get the directory. Boom. Join the millions who use Capterra. And if you would, do me a favor. Go to capterra.com/techguy to let them know you heard it here. CAPTERRA.com/techguy. It's fun just to play with it and find all sorts of stuff. Capterra.com/techguy. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and augmented reality and Wi-Fi routers, anything on your mind. 888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can call us even from outside those areas, anywhere in the world. We get calls from over the world, which is nice, all over the world. Just use Skype out or something like that. Anything to let you call landlines in the U.S. And because it's a toll-free number, 888-827-5536, shouldn't cost you anything, no matter where you're calling from. Jack is next from Santa Clarita, California. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, I'm looking to put together like a 13.3 laptop or even a 15-point laptop with the best specs to give me the most speed for like music videos and also karaoke. So like, I'm trying to put together something like an i5 versus an i7.
i5 is fine. There's no reason to get an i7.
Okay, and then mechanical.
Get an SSD. There's no reason these days not to get a solid-state drive. It will either add cost or reduce capacity. But, you know, these laptops these days come with 2-3 terabyte drives. You don't need that much storage on most laptops. A 512 gig SSD is going to be more than enough usually. And it's really, boy, the speed difference is huge there. RAM, 8 would be the minimum. 16 is good. You don't need more than 16. The RAM, if you think about memory, there's a curve, amount of memory. I'm going to see if you can visualize this. Amount of memory along the bottom and up the side, speed. And you'll see as you start to add memory, a big jump in speed, but then it will level out. And it will be a slight increase in speed after a certain point. That sweet spot is where you get the biggest jump, and that's from 8 to 16. From 16 to 32 is not nearly as much improvement in speed. And, of course, most applications don't need all that RAM. There's sometimes when you need a lot of RAM. If you're doing Photoshop editing of giant photos or you have 100 tabs open in your browser, browsers are RAM hogs. Some of those things can slow your system down if you don't have enough memory. 16 is usually enough.
Okay, great. And then any recommendation on maybe whether I get like a Dell or an Asus or an HP?
All three are good. I would add Lenovo ThinkPads to your list.
Okay.
That's my daily driver is a Lenovo ThinkPad X1 ThinkPad Yoga. I'm testing out the Yoga 920, which is also very nice. That's a lot less expensive than the ThinkPad, but I love the robust ThinkPad build. I really feel like they're tough. If you want the best looking screens, I think the Dell XPS 13 or 15, those screens are fantastic. If you want the best looking, thinnest, lightest, I would take a look at the HPs. They have some, I use a Spectre 13T that is wafer thin. So, you know, one of the beauties of buying a Windows laptop versus a Mac laptop is there's so many manufacturers and so there's so much diversity. You can kind of pick and choose. You can't get everything in one laptop, but you can say what's important to you. And, you know, if battery life is important, it's going to be bigger and heavier than if looks are important or light, you know, portability and things like that. The HPs are the ultimate in portables. I think they're gorgeous. Asus and Acer both make excellent laptops, too, though. In fact, the Acer S7 for a long time was my thin and light choice, and they have a successor to that that's very nice as well. So, you're in a golden age of PCs, frankly. You get more PC for less money than ever before. And because we've flatlined in terms of performance, in terms of processor performance, you don't need to get an i7. Most of the time, if you put an i7 in a laptop, it's going to be, for thermal reasons, for heat reasons, it's going to be slowed down anyway. So, an i5 is plenty.
Keeping with an i5, does it make that much of a difference if, like, a generation 7 or 8? I mean, is it that much of a difference?
Well, then, yeah. First of all, Intel has muddied the waters. They have – so the Coffee Lake is generation 8. Kaby Lake is generation 7, except there are some Kaby Lakes that are labeled generation 8, which is completely confusing. Intel has just made a hash of this. The newest Kaby Lake processors have better performance power curves. They give you more performance for less power, and less power means less heat as well. And those are generally better for mobiles, but they don't have mobile parts out yet. They'll be soon. So I don't know. The answer is no, it doesn't. These are finesses that only massive enthusiasts care about, the kind of people who read a non-tech, you know, and parse every syllable. For you, I think it don't worry about it so much. The processor is no longer the gating factor in performance. It's the speed of the hard drive, the amount of RAM, things like that. Get a good screen too. I mean, the screen and keyboard you spend a lot of time on. One of the reasons I buy ThinkPads is I love their keyboards. They really continue to make very usable keyboards. Most of the writers I know really love ThinkPads because they're banging all the time on those ThinkPads, and their wrists are less bugged. So, I mean, you know, it's a kind of one of those, you know, you have a embarrassment of riches. It's one of those situations where there are many great choices out there. Enjoy.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Is it just karaoke that you're doing? You're making music or you're listening to music?
As a DJ, I play karaoke. Ah. We play music videos and also play music as well. But the music's not really the issue. The audio is not really the issue.
Yeah, I think it's not.
A little bit of lag, yeah.
It's not super challenging. You know, it's not like Photoshop or gaming. So you should be okay with almost anything out there. Just get enough RAM and a fast hard drive is really the most important thing for you. You want to load those things from the hard drive as fast as possible.
Great. Okay, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. We live in an amazing time. If you think about what you pay now for laptops, often under $1,000 in the power, these are basically supercomputers. It's interesting because Apple's quarterly results came out last week. And they sold more Macs than in years. Mac sales were up. iPad sales were up. And that surprised me because, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of the new MacBooks. I've always been a MacBook fanatic and always recommended them as the kind of the creme de la creme, if you could afford it, the best made, the best designed. And I'm a fan of Mac OS. But Apple took a wrong turn. They started making their keyboards, these new butterfly switches they're using, mean that the keys don't travel very far, which means you feel like you're stubbing your fingers when you're typing. And writers don't, and programmers, anybody who spends a lot of time on the keyboard do not like that. Well, there's my Mac is making a lot of noises. And I'm very disappointed with the touch bar. I don't know anybody who says, oh, yeah, the touch bar, what a great innovation. That's that little, I mean, it's cool. They replaced the function keys with a little screen, a thin, long screen that they put functions on, and they change depending on what you're doing. And I find them completely non-useful and confusing. You don't want a keyboard that changes depending on what you're doing. Turns out you want a keyboard, if you're touch typing anyway, that stays the same. What a thought. It's always the same. There's no point, because who wants to look down every moment and see, what's my touch bar doing? Let me find that key. It becomes hunt and peck, and that's not good. Not to mention the fact that I keep hitting the touch bar by accident, especially when I hit the delete key. I had to turn Siri off because I'd be typing away and Siri would launch. And I said, what are you, why? I didn't want Siri. Well, the Siri button on the touch bar was right above the delete key. And I just, a little bit of my, the edge of my finger would hit it and trigger it and interrupt me completely. We'll see what Apple does with future laptops, but I think they've really disappointed. But the sales are through the roof. So what do I know? 8888. That's Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. What do I know? Not to mention that Apple is nowhere near the most, using the most recent chips and all of that stuff. That's why I hate to do it, because I'm not as big a... I don't like Windows as much as OS X. Or, I'm sorry, Mac OS. But the choices in hardware are so much better. Look at this ThinkPad. It's got all of these. You know, Apple has two Type-C connectors. This has full-size HDMI, USB 3, display... Oh, no, that's a proprietary Ethernet. I'm not crazy about that. My T420 has a real Ethernet jack. Headphone and microphone jack. On-off button. Two Type-C, full throughput, including one that charges. Another USB 3, another USB 3. And then on the back, it's got more. On the back, it's got an SD card reader and a SIM slot. It's a micro SD card reader, though, which is weird. Not very useful. You think we're going to see a... Yeah, I'll be curious what they do with the Mac Pro. That won't be out till next year, though, right? This is the only Mac Pro that I recommend these days, which is the only one without a touch bar. You know, that is somewhat cheaper because it doesn't have a touch bar, but it's also not nearly as powerful as the touch bar Mac. And it has two Type-Cs and a headphone jack. That's all it's got. And both Type-Cs are on the same side, which is... not as desirable. I wish they did what Google did, which is have one on each side that I can charge from. And on and on and on. I don't want to be a whiner, so I'll stop. Let's dance. You got to play the disco when Dick DiBartolo comes by in half an hour. Our gadget guru, our giz whiz, if you will. Art in L.A., Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Art.
I have a Samsung Galaxy S5, okay. A Relic.
Tis. I sold my S5.
Really?
I think I got $100, maybe.
You can get a trade-in for $200, I'm understanding.
Yeah,
but, I'm shopping around and I want to get the S8 Plus, but it does not have a feature that the Note has, which is a dual lens camera.
Yeah.
Allows you to take pictures like portrait mode. And
right.
So my question can be answered in one of two ways or both. Do you know if the S8 Plus will get the dual lens, or can you sell me on why the Note is better if I don't need it for business?
So the Note, I have both, the S8 and the Note. I stayed with the Note because I never use the stylus, but it's nice to know it's there. It's slightly bigger screen, and yes, those two cameras do make a difference. And, it depends, of course, how much you use your camera on your smartphone. But just as the dual cameras make a difference on Apple's new iPhones, the S7 Plus, the S8 Plus, and now the iPhone X, the advantage initially is that you can zoom, which has always been a problem on smartphones. Is, you know, there's a fixed focal length, usually pretty wide, the equivalent if you're a photographer of 28 millimeters. These so-called telephoto second lenses on most cameras are really more 50 millimeter, equivalent of 50 millimeter, but that is zooming you in, and I find that very useful. But also, the Note 8 uses that second camera for a portrait mode, which is, I think, very good. Not quite as good maybe as Apple's, but it's in real time, which is nice. You can move the slider back and forth. I think it gives you better images. Google, on their new flagship phone, has one lens, and they say, we can do the same thing with some pixel magic. But I like dual lenses. If the price is the same for an S8 and a Note, it really comes down to size for you. The Note is a little bit bigger, and a bigger screen. If you like that real estate, it might be worth it. I never use a stylus, but I feel like having it's kind of cool because you can, for business, for instance, you could jot notes in a meeting and things like that.
So I'm going for the S8 Plus, if anything.
Yeah, that's what I had, the S8 Plus. The difference between the S8 Plus and the Note 8 is pretty minor. It's really the stylus and the camera. You kind of nailed it.
Okay. And you haven't heard, I saw an article from a few months ago that the dual lens might be coming to the S8 Plus.
We don't know what the S9 is going to be. Samsung's made all sorts of noises. At one point, they were saying it was going to have a foldable screen. They've abandoned that. But everybody is starting to say that the S9 will be radically different, an extensive redesign. So if you like how the current S8 Plus is, you might not want it. The one negative, these screens are gorgeous. The cameras are as good as it gets. The one negative in both the S8 Plus and the Note 8 is where the fingerprint sensor is. I just don't find it as useful, as fast, and it's too close to the camera, so I keep hitting the camera. In fact, my Note even has a little reminder. You might want to clean the lens before you take a picture because your fingerprints are all over it. So that's a negative. I think these are both very good. The other thing that you might be glad to hear, both T-Mobile and AT&T are starting to introduce high-speed gigabit throughput cell LTE that takes advantage of the new Qualcomm gigabit chip that is only available. It's not available on the iPhone. It's available on the S8 Plus and the Note 8. So if high-speed internet is a priority for you, and if you live in one of the regions, T-Mobile says they've rolled it out in, I think, 200 cities. AT&T is a little bit more conservative on that. But if you're in one of those areas that T-Mobile's rolled out the new gigabit, that's going to be a big improvement, a lot faster. What else can I? I think they're very similar phones, frankly. But I wouldn't hold out hope on the A9. First of all, we won't see it for 4 or 5 months this spring, probably. And who knows? I mean, the S9. Who knows what the S9 is going to be? We just know it's going to be completely redesigned, and that may be bad. That may be good. I hope it's not. I think they abandoned the idea of making it look like a book, a folding book. That was a interesting, I thought, but maybe not what's going to happen. New sensor. New IoT connectivity. This is according to the latest rumors. In fact, if you Google it, there's new rumors that came out yesterday for the S9. But again, it's all speculation. You'll be happy. Either phone is fantastic. I wouldn't wait. Get the Note. My personal choice, get the Note 8.
Okay.
It's a little more expensive. That's the only downside.
Yeah, $100 or so, right?
Yeah. All right. Any other questions?
That'll do it.
Wait, go look at the screen. Go to the store or phone store and look at the screen. I think you'll be blown away. These new OLED screens on the iPhone X and the Samsung's done them for a long time on the S8 Plus and the S9. Best screens I've ever seen. Just dramatic, gorgeous screens. And on none of those phones have burn-in problems like the Pixel phones. I don't know what Google did wrong with the Pixel 2 XL. Mine comes Monday. I made a mistake. I ordered, a cool color. They call it the Panda. It's got a black top, a white bottom, and an orange button. It's very colorful. But unfortunately, the black phones came out long before the Panda phones came out. My Panda comes on Monday, and I'll have a review for you on the weekend, next weekend. And I'll let you know. One of the reasons I didn't rush to get the Pixel 2 XL is I have hopes that Google's figured out what's going on with their displays and have fixed it by now. Mine shipped on Friday. I'm hoping Google went, oh, got to stop using displays from factory C. We got to go to factory D or something. It's probably not a software fix, although Google has said, we're going to put out software that'll fix it. We'll see. The other good news about the S8, and I presume this is true of the Note 8 as well, is that Samsung has already put out Oreo, the latest version of Android for it, at least in test. And so you'll see that very soon if you don't have it already. That's good. You want to buy a phone from somebody who's going to keep it up to date, especially in the Android world. Apple world's not, you don't worry about it because Apple has deals with all the carriers that they will put out those updates the minute they're available. Apple pushes out a lot of updates. They pushed out just last couple of days ago, an update to the most embarrassing flaw. And you saw it all over Twitter and Facebook. You ever see somebody type a weird, like in their post, it's had an A, space, capital A space, and then a box around a question mark. You ever see any of that? That was a bug in the iOS on both the iPad and the iPhone in iOS 11 that replaced a capital I with a capital A space question mark. You saw it all over Twitter. Apple pushed out a fix, 11.1, I think it's 11.1.1. It just came out. And if you haven't put that fix on, you might want to. And you might want to go back and check your previous posts to see if all the capital I's have been replaced. Yeah, 11.1.1 is the latest. 88, Ask Leo. It's kind of, I don't know how something like that gets by testing. Just strange. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it was an autocorrect bug. The Tech Guy podcast this week, of course, brought to you by the good people at LegalZoom. Not just this week, but forever, because it was at LegalZoom that I first incorporated Twit, made it an LLC, got the trademarks for the Twit logo and the Twit name. And I thank Kevin Rose, because he's the guy who said, when I was starting the business, I said, what should I do? He said, well, first thing, you get an LLC. And LegalZoom.com makes it easy. You don't have to go pay a lawyer $500 an hour. You don't have to. It's easy. You do it all online at LegalZoom.com. They've got all the paperwork you need. It was incredibly easy. It cost very little. As a business owner, it's important, you know, to get these T's crossed and these I's dotted. But a lot of times you don't have the money to do it. You don't have the focus or the time to do it, or you forget. And that's not good when it comes to reviewing contracts or registering for trademarks, staying current on your fees or permits, creating a business, an LLC or an incorporation, a Chapter S or Chapter C Corp. There's nothing like LegalZoom.com. They will help simplify your life. Created 16 years ago by the brightest minds in both law and technology. It's not a law firm. And by the way, that's a good thing, because you don't have to think about the clock ticking all the time. They've helped more than 2 million business owners easily and affordably navigate the legal system with confidence. No billable hours. No. But you can talk to an attorney. This is interesting. And they didn't have this when I used LegalZoom more than a decade ago. But I love it now. They have pre-negotiated flat rates with lawyers in every state, a nationwide network of independent attorneys that you can consult with. And you don't, there's no mystery, there's no billable hours. You know what you're paying. It's a flat rate, and you can get the advice you need. So it's kind of a win-win, because there are questions. I remember when I applied for the LLC, should it be in California? Should it be in Delaware? And I didn't really know. I did a Google search, which was turned out not to be the best resource. Had they had this network of attorneys, I would have asked somebody, and they would have gotten the right answer instead of my answer. I should have been in California, but that's another story. Go take some pressure off yourself, at least for me. Go to LegalZoom.com and take care of your business before the year winds down. For special savings, and let them know you heard it here, use the promo code TECHGUY when you check out at the referral box. They'll give you a discount, and more importantly, they will know that you heard it here, and that's important to me. LegalZoom.com. I want you to use it, because if you don't, you'll regret it. And for wills, too, by the way, a lot of the personal legal stuff, durable power of attorney, medical power of attorney. Do you have one of those? You can also make a pet will. I don't think people think about this, but if you think your pets are going to outlive you, they might. You might want to have a plan, right? LegalZoom.com. Don't forget the offer code, Tech Guy. And we thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, spinning the discs today, keeping the beat going. Let's go to Duluth, Georgia. DJ is on the line. Hi, DJ.
Hello, DJ.
Are you there? Oh, I'm going to put DJ on hold because maybe he fell asleep. Sometimes happens.
Hey, Leo, can you hear me now?
Oh, I can.
Hey, sorry, I had you on mute.
Oh, that's all right. Let's talk. I mean, now I got two all people right. on the air, though. Wait a minute, hold on, Elisa. We'll be with you in a second. I can put Elisa on hold. There we go. Now I can talk to you, DJ. Go ahead.
Hey, great to talk to you. I'm honored, and I also like to throw out a shout to all the veterans.
Yes, on this 11/11/2017.
So I'm trying to help out a young widow in my neighborhood, trying not to spend a lot of money, but she's got an old MacBook Pro, and she wants to reset it. So I know how to do that. I'm a Windows guy. I'm not a Mac guy, but I can Google stuff. And yeah. The question I have is, she's got Office 2011 on there, so she doesn't have her key.
Yeesh.
So I'm concerned about.
Yeah, you don't want to reset it yet, because you.
Right.
Now there is, and this is one of the nice things Apple does. She wants to reset it because.
It's just getting slower and old. Okay. She just wants it back to factory refresh.
Maybe before you do that, when you go into the reboot, the recovery, there is a merely refresh the system version that will take the system, put it in a folder called old system software, and put an up-to-date fresh system on there. But it won't break the applications.
Okay.
So that's an intermediate step that may do a lot of what she wants to have happen without having to get a serial number for her Office. Modern versions of Office.
She ordered it online, and they sent her the key via email, but she doesn't have that email anymore.
Yeah. Never delete email, folks.
All right.
That's your database of information. She may be able to get that serial number from Microsoft directly. Probably can if she calls them. So if you do find you have to erase the hard drive and really do a fresh install, which is always a good thing to do on computers, but this is the one downside. You have to reinstall programs. Probably a call to Microsoft. You can get that serial number.
Okay. And then I have one more question.
Sure.
It looks like she saved folders only onto the laptop. So like, on a Windows system, it would be PST files, and I would just copy those.
Oh, for Outlook, you mean?
To do that on,
for Outlook?
Yeah, for Outlook. And I don't know how to do that on a Mac.
Well, that's interesting. So she wants to save her email, calendar, and contacts in Outlook.
And her email. She's got several folders, like 2013, 2014.
She has archive. Oh, she's made archive folders. She's already archived that mail out.
I'm assuming that's what she did, yes.
I thought they used PST files on the Mac. I haven't used Outlook in a while. Let me just... Oh, they make OLM files. Ah, okay. So those files, which are .olm files, Outlook Macintosh, I'm guessing is what that stands for, can be copied. Okay. And they're just standard archive files, which you can restore then. Probably the best thing for her to do is to do exactly that. Use Outlook's archive feature to archive all of her email into an OLM file, copy the OLM file, and then should you need to reinstall Office, you know, should you end up wiping the drive, you can restore the OLM files.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah. I appreciate the information.
I guess OLM is the equivalent of PST. But you know, I don't know what the main Outlook database is. That's an interesting question. I would use the archive feature, just, you know, that way you know you got it backed up.
Okay, that sounds good. I think you've answered all my questions.
Good. Well, you're a very nice fella for helping her out.
All right. Thank you, sir.
We got to do that. We geeks have to help out our disadvantaged friends. Not everybody has the geek gene, you know. And I don't hold it against you if you don't. It's like the math gene, you know. Some people can do math. Some people look at it and it's like a fog appears in their brain, and they go, So we've got to help those people. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. Ryan on the line from Minnesota. Hello, Ryan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I actually talked to you about 18 years ago on call for help when I was about 10 years old.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's nice to talk to you again on the old Call for Help TV show back on Tech TV. Wow.
Yep. So my question for you today was, I want to learn computer programming, but I just don't know what language to learn first.
Do you want to learn it to get a job in it, or do you want to learn it because you're as a hobby or you're interested in it?
Both.
Actually. Both.
Yep.
So there's the right way to do it, which takes longer. And then there's the easy way to do it, which might be a better way so you can go out and get a job. But the problem with learning to program with the idea of I'm going to learn a skill for getting a job is you kind of don't learn the fundamental mindset that I think is very valuable. The best programmers, depends whether you're going to be a journeyman programmer or a genius programmer. And if you feel like you have an aptitude for it, I'd say you're only 28. Let's go for the genius programmer. But this is going to take a lot longer. Are you in a hurry to get a job?
I'm not in a hurry, no.
Fortunately, you know, there are all these online, they call them MOOCs, massively online courseware that allows you, like Coursera is one. Coursera has some excellent programming courses. If you have iTunes U, for instance, has for free the Stanford course they give undergraduates for learning how to program apps for iOS. Free, with all the coursework and everything, you can get basically a Stanford education. That's a good one for learning iOS because they bring in Apple people and they update it every year. Each year, it's completely revised to as it needs to be to apply to iOS. The problem is you're learning a specific skill. Let me think how this would be. This would be like if you're going to build a bridge, learning how to attach girders, put down pylons, or you could start at the beginning and learn the mechanics, the engineering of how a bridge stands up. And I think if you're going to be a great programmer, it's better to start at the beginning.
Okay.
So for that, and this is also free, I recommend a program that was developed at Rice University. It's currently in its second edition. Don't buy the book. The book is out of date. But it's called How to Design Programs, HTDP. If you Google HTDP, you can find the current edition. It was used for many years, not only by Rice, but many universities as an undergraduate introduction to programming. And it tells you in the beginning, it uses a specialized beginner's programming language that you can download for free on any computer, Linux, Mac, or Windows, called Dr. Racket. But all the instructions are at the beginning of the book. If you work through that book, and it'll take you maybe 6 months, you will have such a phenomenal foundation. You will be a mechanical engineer, not a girder attacher. Then go take a Coursera course in Java or JavaScript. Probably JavaScript is the language of the future. Maybe React OS, which is a JavaScript framework. Those things, from a point of view of getting a job, would be very good skills. HTTP is not going to get you a job. It's going to make you a brilliant programmer. And you're going to do it right from scratch. I kind of wish I'd learned that way. Most of us of my generation learned how to program all wrong using BASIC. And it's messed our brains up. So you're gonna learn through HTTP and Dr. Racket. You're gonna be great. And then the next step after that is the structure and interpretation of computer programs, also free, SICP. Those two books, if you mastered those, take you about a year to go through both of those. You will have in your brain such deep understanding of how to write software that you'll be light years ahead of your peers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Not React OS. Did I say React OS? I didn't mean to say that. That was a slip. I meant ReactJS.org. So this is the future of probably of programming. I'm thinking it's JavaScript. It's a library. You'll learn JavaScript in this. But then you're writing progressive web apps, which means the apps that you write will run on desktops as well as iOS. And then so what was the question? You remember when you were 10 years old? What was the question you asked me then?
It's pretty embarrassing. I asked, what do I use to open up a zip file?
I love it. Hey, you know what? If it weren't those questions are my favorite because I can answer them.
Yep. Well, hey, thankfully, I've came a long way since then.
So. Yeah, I'm really. This even if you don't do it professionally, it is the best hobby ever. And the thing you learn from how to design programs is modern concepts like test-driven design that will be so useful to you. I think it's very approachable. You can self-teach this. You don't need a teacher to do this. But they do have videos, and you know, there's lots of materials built around it. But I think, and the language you're using is not really a language that you're going to ever use. It's a design for beginners, basically. So you don't have too much. You're not spending time. See, most of the time you take a language course, you're learning the language. You're learning how to use Java, not how to write software.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah, I think you're going to love. HTTP is fantastic. Fantastic. I've recommended it for many years, and I can barely get through it. But I love it. Have fun. Nice to meet you, or talk to you again, I guess, huh?
Yep, I'll talk to you in another 18 years, I guess.
No, I hope sooner than that. Take care. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, our gadget guru, the gizmo wizard himself, Dick D. Bartolo from Gizneyland. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I heard you talking about your ThinkPad, so...
I love my ThinkPad.
Yeah, before I do my gadget, did you know that 2 weeks ago, it was 25 years since IBM introduced the first ThinkPad?
Yes, I did. In fact, they have a 25th anniversary edition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, have you seen that yet? Apparently, people have bought it, so they don't get it.
But really?
It has the old color logo, and it has, you know.
Yes, it has that, there's still the eraser thing, the little red mouse.
Well, they
mouse
still do and, that. They never stopped doing that.
No, the little
nubbin in the middle there. I love my two ThinkPads, and I think they're still as well made as they were 25 years ago. They're a little lighter.
Do you know the price of the first one?
How much was the first ThinkPad?
The first color one was 25 years ago. It weighed 7.5 pounds, had a 10.4-inch screen with 256 colors, and it had a 120-megabyte hard drive.
Oh,
and
my God.
The cost was $4,350.
You had to really want one to get one of them in those
days. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so now this week, CES had an event on Thursday called CES Unveiled, where they announced some of the nominees for CES 2018 winners, or would-be or hopeful winners. And one of them I thought was really neat. So there are a lot of companies out there working on translation for their devices. And so there's a new company to me called Line and Naver. It's two different companies. Line is one, Naver is another. They're both from South Korea. And they were showing their Bluetooth wireless earbuds. So it does everything, you know, it takes your phone calls, you can give it commands, listen to your music. But if you are traveling and you come across a person you want to talk with and you don't know their language, you give them one of your earbuds.
Oh.
Then you go into the app and say, I want the left one to still be English.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the right one to translate to and from. And then you pick.
It's a little unhygienic.
That's the one thing.
but it's interesting. Yes. I think it's interesting.
I would carry a little bag of those little handy wipes that you say, you know.
Wipe it off first. Yeah. So that's really interesting. Wow.
I know that, you know, a lot of companies are working on it, but a lot of times you need two sets of them. So you each have a set. Or I think the Pixel, you can ask them something and then you hold up your phone.
Yeah, the phone. So they showed this off with the new Pixel 2. The earbuds tell you the translation of their language. You're speaking to somebody in Japanese, for instance.
Yeah, right.
And then you'll speak into the phone in English and the phone will play the translation out to them. Then they speak into the phone in Japanese, and your earbuds play the English, silently to you.
I
think that's adequate. I mean, the phone is pretty loud. You can do that now. You don't need those special earbuds. It's just that the phone says everything out loud.
Yeah, no, that's good. So that eliminates having to worry about, do you want to stick that? Where has this been in
your
ear? But
I am looking forward to seeing more Bluetooth earbuds because so many phones now don't have headphone jacks. We've got to, I guess we're all going wireless.
No. So this is a great way to not I hated learning languages. I know you actually majored in, what did you major
Chinese.
In? Chinese. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You never give me credit, Leo, but 3 years into your, 3 months into your career, you were saying, Dick, I don't know, I'm not getting any listeners. And that's when I said, Leo, do them in English. Yeah.
You know, I admit, I was stymied.
Totally.
Actually, that was probably terrible advice. There's a lot more Chinese speakers.
Oh, that's interesting.
Did you hear they spent that Singles Day? Today is Singles Day in China. The total sales on Alibaba, the Chinese Amazon, in effect.
Yes, exactly.
$25 billion in one day. That's more than $1 billion an hour of sales. A billion. I know. I'm flabbergasted too. He's speechless, ladies and gentlemen. The Dick DiBartolo is never speechless. So is that your gadget, the translating Bluetooth earbuds? Can we get them yet?
No, they're going to do the live demos at CES, and they expect them to be on sale in the spring, $149.
Okay. Well, I'm getting my Pixel Buds, the ones Google is shipping in about a week. I'm getting the phone on Monday and the Pixel Buds in about a week. So,
okay, so the phone has it. It's free on the phone. And is it free with the Pixel Buds,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, it's all kind of built in.
It's all kind of
using Google Translate. But we'll do this. You'll speak in Pig Latin. And I'll speak in English, and we can have a conversation. It'll be amazing.
Yeah. No, I already asked them if they had Brooklyn to English.
I do sometimes with you. I need translation.
Yeah. She said they're working on it. Well, first she said, could you say that again?
Gizwiz.biz. That's where you'll find this guy. In fact, a link to the earbuds and a lot more. He does gadget reviews on ABC World News Now and a whole bunch of other places. Gizwiz.biz. While you're there, you can also play the What the Heck Is It contest, the last What the Heck Is It contest for a while anyway. I don't know. What are you going to do?
Until January 1st, and then we're going to be playing for other stuff.
We'll be playing for other prizes. Okay, so it's the last for autographed copies of Mad Magazine. GIZ.WIZ.BIZ. Identify a close-up of a weird gadget, and you, too, could win a copy of Mad Magazine autographed by this guy, Maddest. Right. A lot of people, when we talked last week, said, is Mad going away? It's not going away. It's going away from New York.
Yes, it's moving to Burbank, California. And they have asked me, they said, you know, the editor was in town. He said, listen, you've been in every issue for 51 years. We would like you to continue writing.
I should
from
hope
here.
So. Yeah. So you stay in New York, but headquarters, you don't want to be near the office anyway. Headquarters is in Burbank. That's fine.
24.
My boss is in Burbank, too. I stay up here in Northern California.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, Dick. Don't forget that.
Oh, okay. I'm writing all these things down. They're wonderful.
I'll say them in Chinese next time. Okay. Gizwiz.biz, and don't forget his podcast, Gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D. We'll
okay, buddy. Talk to you next week.
And I thank you for your support. We do this show every weekend. I hope you'll come by again next time and join us. We thank Mike Cozio, our musical director, for spinning the discs. We thank Kim Schaffer for answering the phones, and I thank most of all you for geeking out with us. If you heard something on the show and you want to know more, you don't have to write anything down. We keep it all easily available for free at our website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Each show has its own page, each page divided up into hours, and then each hour divided up into segments, calls, that kind of thing. So you can go right to the call. Find the answer you want. It's got a great search tool. There's no sign up. I don't want any money. This is a free service paid for by our fine advertisers. But if you have a thought, you don't have to yell at the radio. You can also leave comments there, and we appreciate it. Thanks for being here. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Oh, and thanks to all the vets for their service. We appreciate it. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.